From Birmingham, Alabama, you're listening to the Flat Picking Pilgrim's Progress. I'm your host, Gary Furr, and I'm so glad to have you with me today. Whether you're sitting in your favorite chair or riding along in the car, I'm glad we're going to get to spend this time together. So here we are on the day of the eclipse. I haven't been all that worked up. Maybe it's my age. I've seen a lot of traumatic and wonderful and terrible things, from wars and rumors of wars to earthquakes and assassinations and Challenger explosion and all the rest. This has been a pretty big event, at least in the media, and for all those who own anything to rent out or sell in the path of the 100% eclipse, because I was reading that people said that if you're at 87% or 98%, there's not that much difference. You might as well drive on several hours to the 100%. And since all those rooms are booked and I made no provision to go and didn't even buy the glasses, I'm just going to watch it on TV. But there is a word that I think about, and it is the word awe. It is a word that Christians ruined with the song, "Our God is an Awesome God," and then sang it to death in every youth group until awesome finally migrated over to social media and into every person's mouth under a certain age, talking about something they just ate or a piece of clothing they just got. It's awesome, awesome, awesome. So it didn't mean anything anymore. But the word awe always takes me back to a writer named Rudolf Otto, who wrote a book called The Idea of the Holy. And in that, he talked about the idea of the non-rational, or we might call it the sub-rational or irrational part, the part of God that is beyond us. It is inaccessible to us. It's about those things that are so big and so vast and so beyond our knowing that they strike terror in our heart. And so awe was both an experience of fascination and of terror. He called it the Mysterium Tremendum. And so that when there is an encounter with what he calls the holy, it both draws us and terrifies us. And that is awe. That was the experience of a Moses on the mountain who sees a bush that is burning but not consumed, and so on. And the reason eclipse brings that up took me back to a book by Annie Dillard when she wrote about seeing a total eclipse back in 1982. And it's worth reading, but I'll read a little bit to you today just for reflection. She said, "I have said the most terrifying part was the screams I heard. I have since read that screaming with hysteria is a common reaction even to expected total eclipses. People on all the hillsides, including, I think, myself, screamed when the black body of the moon detached from the sky and rolled over the sun. But something else was happening at that same instant, and it was this, I believe, that made us scream. The second before the sun went out, we saw a wall of dark shadow coming, speeding at us. We no sooner saw it than it was upon us like thunder. It roared up the valley. It slammed our hill and knocked us out. It was the monstrous swift shadow cone of the moon. I have since read that this wave of shadow moves 1,800 miles an hour. Language can give no sense of this sort of speed, 1,800 miles an hour. It was 195 miles wide, no end in sight. You saw only the edge. It rolled at you across the land at 1,800 miles an hour, hauling darkness like plague behind it. Seeing it and knowing it was coming straight for you was like feeling a slug of anesthetic shoot up your arm. If you think very fast, you may have time to think. Soon it will hit my brain. You can feel the deadness race up your arm. You can feel the appalling, inhuman speed of your own blood. We saw the wall of shadow coming and screamed before it hit. This was the universe about which we have read so much and never before felt. The universe as a clockwork of loose spheres flung at stupefying, unauthorized speeds. How could anything moving so fast not crash, not veer from its orbit amok like a car out of control on a turn? Less than 2 minutes later, when the sun emerged, the trailing edge of that shadow cone sped away. It coursed down our hill and raced eastward over the plain faster than the eye could believe. It swept over the plain and dropped over the planet's rim in a twinkling. It had clobbered us, and now it roared away. We blinked in the light. It was as though an enormous, loping god in the sky had reached down and slapped the Earth's face. During the moments of totality, it was so dark that drivers on the highway below turned on their car's headlights. We could see the highway's route as a strand of lights. It was bumper to bumper down there. It was 8:15 in the morning, Monday morning, and people were driving from Yakima to work. That it was dark as night and eerie as hell an hour after dawn apparently meant that in order to see to drive to work, people had to use their headlights. Four or five cars pulled off the road. The rest in a line at least 5 miles long drove to town. Well, that's pretty overwhelming. And then she went on to say later on, when the sun appeared as a blinding bead on the ring side, the eclipse was over. The black lens cover appeared again, black, backlighted and slid away. At once the yellow light made the sky blue again. The black lid dissolved and vanished. The real world began there. I remember now. We all hurried away. We were born and bored at a stroke. We rushed down the hill. We found our car. We saw other people streaming down the hillsides. We joined the highway traffic and drove away. And we never looked back. It was a general vamoose and an odd one, for when we left the hill, the sun was still partially eclipsed, a sight rare enough and one that in itself we would probably have driven 5 hours to see, but enough is enough. One turns at last even from glory itself with a sigh of relief. From the depths of mystery and even from the heights of splendor, we bounce back and hurry for the latitudes of home. There are just those places and moments, aren't there, that remind us how much of what we call life and reality and the world is sort of created inside us, in our brain, and in the little social world where we live, thinking that all the rest of the world is like this when it is not. It doesn't take long moving away from home to find out that most of the world doesn't think like your mother and father or your aunts and uncles, and there is disorientation. And then when you go back home, you don't really belong there anymore. And we are always grappling with that wall of darkness that comes flying at us every now and then. And the only thing that we can use to describe it is holiness or awe. Not the awe of the little glib songs, but the real thing. Terrifying. So big that there is no way to describe it. Sometimes it happens in crises in your family or your life. Sometimes it's at the funeral when you're sitting there considering that this is the end we're all coming to. You can't live there. It just is too hard. If you sat and thought about it all the time, you'd lose your mind. But you have to see the wall of shadow every now and then. And remember that unless something from beyond you is buoying you up, you won't keep floating. Well, happy Eclipse Day. I hope those who have all gotten wrought up in anxiety will not be disappointed too much if the world doesn't end today, because it probably won't, because those schemes are all a little silly, and they've come and gone 1,000 times in the Christian history times. A reminder to us that Jesus said, first, nobody knows the time except the Father, and secondly, that all the things that we are terrified by are not even the end, they are just the prelude to whatever the end will be. And so there's finally just faith and grace and trust.
I'm Gary Furr, and this is the Flat Picking Pilgrim's Progress. Thanks for joining me today. You can find my music at gafurr.com, and you can go to my blog site for lots of other information and writings at garyfurr.me, garyfurr.me. Once again, thank you so much. Join me next time on the Flat Picking Pilgrim's Progress.